Susan Brown of the Chapel Hill Public Library joins us now in the studio, revving herself up because it is late in the day and we are both tired. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's Wednesday. We're halfway there.
Yeah, more than halfway. We're 3/5 of the way there.
We are. And tomorrow, as one of my colleagues, she does not call it Thursday. She calls it pre-Friday.
Oh, nice.
Which is, I think, a great way of looking at it.
Technically, every day is pre-Friday.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
That's true.
You could call Monday pre-Friday if you want to.
That's pre-Friday.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think he won the gold medal in the Olympics. All right. So we're talking about, first of all, before we talk books, there's an event coming up at the library here soon, isn't there?
There are many events coming up at the library.
Isn't there a Talk to a Lawyer event?
Yeah, Ask a Lawyer Day is Saturday.
Sorry, I was neither of us are looking at the schedule.
I know. I think it's Saturday.
I was looking at the schedule earlier today. I was like, oh, that's exciting. I should ask Susan about that.
Well, and I was just telling you, my phone is on its last legs. I believe it's Saturday from 11 to 3.
I'm pulling this up right now.
But it's cool because you can come in and you can do just what it says. You can ask a lawyer. You can sit down and ask a lawyer, you know, sort of snarky flip questions, or get real legal advice from a real lawyer.
Yes. And actually, you've done this a few times. Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
I was close. 11 to 3. 10 to 1. 10 to 1, folks.
At the Chapel Hill Public Library. And you've got lawyers coming in from all over the area and sitting down and just sort of out of the goodness of their hearts, basically, because it's totally free, right? You go in and you sit down and you can talk to a lawyer about anything.
And it's a really popular event. And we've hosted it. I know we hosted it last year. And we may have hosted it before, but we love having them there. And it's a really great event.
And really cool, too, because I think a lot of people, like, how do you begin to, you have legal questions, if you just have one question or something like that, how do you even begin to sort of navigate the legal process? This is a great way to start.
Well, and my sense of it is usually it's that rabbit hole of, I just want to know this one thing.
Right,
well, then
right.
you need to know all these other pieces.
We've got law school applications over here in the corner. but yeah, that's
I actually dreamed of being a lawyer or a cop. Yeah.
Wow.
I either want to be a lawyer or a cop.
That's cool.
I still kind of do. Like,
yeah,
I read all those
really
books.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Lydia Lavelle is the mayor of Carver, is trying to get me to go to law school at NC Central because she teaches there too. So
oh, right on.
Might still happen.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see you like as a legal scholar.
Right.
I don't know if I could see you like.
I don't know if I could see going to law school at this stage in my life, like working nights and staying up till all hours in the morning with
reading
a
really big books.
Reading huge books. Yeah. I do that anyway.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah. All right. So we're talking books this week, and the big news, of course, in Chapel Hill, the announcement yesterday: Google Fiber coming to Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Raleigh and Durham and Morrisville and Cary and Garner, because of course. And that's led us to talk about Google Fiber specifically, but sort of the internet and technology in general.
Yes, we are super excited about Google Fiber at the library. So we come on the show every week and talk about books, which is a super important part of what we do, but also technology and access to information. So Google Fiber really, I'm going to say it, really turns our pages at the library, gets us excited. That you can't see the rolling eyes on the radio right now from Aaron Keck. He's like, oh.
If I had a want noise on Google. And I'm the worst person to talk about bad puns because I'll do that all the time. But that's up there. That's really good.
I'm proud to throw it in there. Right.
Well done.
So Google Fiber, yes. And actually, it's really interesting. So first off, I will say, working for the town of Chapel Hill, and this is true of all the partners in the region that have been working on this, kudos to the town staff and all the folks that were working behind the scenes to make this happen, because they needed all kinds of information. There was all kinds of meetings and forms, and the folks that work for the town and all of the municipalities and other groups that got it together, it's not an easy process when Google comes and says, we want to bring fiber and we need 18,000 pieces of information from 8 different municipalities and all of that. So there was a lot of work.
Especially when you're talking about, 3 different counties, Wake and Durham and Orange and Raleigh and Durham and Chapel Hill and Carrboro and this and that.
And Garner.
And Garner and Cary and Morrisville, because...
Don't leave them out.
Don't leave Morrisville out. They've got a strip mall in there somewhere. But so many different communities, so many different agencies within all these communities. And we were talking earlier this hour about the video that Mark Kleinschmidt and Mark Chilton did a few years ago where they got together and sang a song trying to invite Google in. And we were excited about the press conference yesterday. But that is just the tiniest little tip of the iceberg of all of the work that was done. So yeah.
Right. And actually, I haven't seen that video either. I know Kristen said that she hadn't seen it.
I think it's off. I think it's been scrubbed from the internet. So, Mark Fleischman said it's on the Chapel Hill Vimeo page. I can't find it on the Chapel Hill Vimeo page.
I'll have to seek out that information.
Anyone out there
that's what
who still has
librarians
a copy of
do.
That video.
Yeah, yeah. If anybody can find it, we can.
All right.
But I will say at that time I was living in Kansas when this was going on, and Topeka, Kansas renamed the city Google.
Right, yeah.
But Kansas City ended up getting it. And what's really interesting is the library there really positioned itself at the center of it. And so rolling it out and getting the library itself connected to the fiber early on. And now they're doing some insanely cool stuff. So they have a grant, and what they're doing is, and I can't quite wrap my head around it, but using the Google Fiber connections, the library is working on a program to check out software to people. Like if you need Adobe Photoshop for a weekend, they're going to check it out to you using the fiber, which is really cool, right?
Did I just blow your mind? Yes.
So, and then there's other places. Chattanooga, Tennessee is a gigabit city, but they did their own, and their library is doing great stuff. So we're really, really psyched to be thinking about this and talking about ways that the library can leverage it to help us meet our goals and serve the community and be a part of it.
That's really cool. Have you started that conversation already, or just starting to, or like?
Yeah, yeah. We're just starting to have that conversation, and we really want to kind of and really talk to all of the libraries in the area and say, how can we all get together and think about ways to leverage this?
Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. So books about technology then is our official subject for today. I had a hard time coming up with books about, because like we've talked about this on the air before, I look like a huge science fiction fan, and I am really not one. So like I'm mining my scanty knowledge of science fiction.
But you assume that it has to be science fiction. Only one of my books is.
Well, no, actually, only one of mine is, too. So, yeah, that's where I started. But then I was like, no, what else can I do?
So who's first?
I think you should be first.
Okay, I'll be first.
Okay. I've actually got one solicited recommendation from someone else, which I'll talk about in a minute as well.
Okay. So the first book that I would recommend, it's a very short book. Mm-hmm. And I checked just before I came in. Chapel Hill Public Library doesn't own it. But as we learned last week, all I've got to do is ask, and they'll get it. It came out in the last, I think, 2 years, and it's called The Victorian Internet, The Remarkable Story of the Telegraph and the 19th Century's Online Pioneers.
Oh.
And the author is Tom Standage. Tom Standage. And the premise of it is this. He sort of lays this out in the early part of the book. He says, if a bunch of Victorians, you know, late 19th century Victorians were transported to the 21st century, and we came out and said, check this out. We've got this thing called the internet, and it connects people throughout the world, and you can send messages about politics or kittens or the birth of the grandchild. And it's super cool. They would be like, whatever,
right.
We had that.
Yeah.
And it's all about the birth of the telegraph. And it draws these really fascinating parallels between the two technologies and their implications and their impacts. And it really is interesting. I mean, just like with the internet, early on, the government tried to control the telegraph networks, and that failed. It had these visionary kind of backers. And of course, just like we have learned, the telegraph spawned the telegraph brought with it sort of the equivalent of entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And hackers.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of that stuff. So it's a really interesting book. And it, of course, intertwines Samuel Morse and Thomas Edison and all of that. But it's a fascinating book. It's very short. And we will have it on the shelf soon. And it's called The Victorian Internet by Tom Standage.
Awesome. I like it. And the one really cool thing that the telegraph does, and just every communications technology in the internet is just the latest iteration of this, is it brings the world closer together than you could have ever even conceived of it being before. The telegraph did that. The telephone did that. Television, radio, like it allows people to communicate with each other on a scale hitherto unforeseen, like across the world. And it's sort of the same effect every single time.
Well, and that's a really interesting point, because in the book he talks about it and he says like the world shrunk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But also he talks about it much like with the internet. There were these expectations that this was going to shepherd in world peace and brotherly love and all of that. And it didn't do it. And then they ended up blaming that technology for not doing those things. Yep. And so it's a really interesting look at the parallels.
Yeah. The more things change, right?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So so I had three recommendations, but you got me thinking about not sort of the internet and future technology, but sort of the history of technology. And that reminds me of one of the best books that I have read, nonfiction books that I have read recently, which is The Modern Mind by Peter Watson. Have you seen
this?
No. It's a huge book. It's like 800 pages, but it's so worth reading. It's the subtitle is An Intellectual History of the 20th Century, and it starts with the year 1900 and all of the developments in science, and not just science and technology, but also art and literature and philosophy and thought and psychology and economics and anthropology and archaeology and just sort of intellect in general, but also really focusing on science and physics and quantum mechanics and new advances in technology and television and radio and all that leading up to the internet and the cable and everything else in the present day. And it's this utterly comprehensive history of the way the human mind changed, or the way the human mind conceives of its universe changed in the 20th century. And it's just really well written, and it's so much really good, engaging information about things that I had never experienced before. I hadn't heard of these people. I had heard of them, but I didn't know very much about them. I knew them by name, and that was about it. Really, really good introduction if you want to just understand the history of the way that people thought in the 20th century. That's the book to get. So,
wow.
Like that. Yeah.
Never even heard of it.
It's really good. There's another one, I think, called The Modern World by Paul Johnson, which is also another like big 800-page book. But I think Watson is better than Johnson, or I'm not sure. So I've heard. Anyway, they're both good, I think. But I've read Watson. That is good.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome.
Right on. You're like alive with the 20th. I mean, you're got the hands going.
Yes.
You're into it. It sounds great.
That's how I stay awake at the end of the day. Like, oh, my God, I'm excited about this book.
Okay. So my next one, I've actually got two that I want to mention here, is fiction.
Okay.
And I love this title, To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. Ooh. And it's a novel by an author named Joshua Ferris. Uh-huh. I think this is his third book. He's only got three books. This is either his second or his third. And the main character in it is named Paul, and he is for lack of some better words, he's a disillusioned Luddite curmudgeon. So he's really a warm and fuzzy guy. Yeah. He pretty much hates everything.
He's a DLC. I like it.
He's a what?
He's a DLC.
A DLC. A disillusioned Luddite curmudgeon. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
So he doesn't like religion. He doesn't really like people. He's a Red Sox fan, but he doesn't really like it when they win because he's happier when they lose.
Oh, yeah.
So he can, you know, wallow
good
in
job,
that.
Right.
But what he hates more than probably anything is modern technology.
Okay.
And he's a dentist.
Yes.
So he calls cell phones.
It's a very unfortunate occupation to have.
Right? You don't like technology and people?
Like Orange Scrivello from Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, nice.
This is from 1836.
Well done.
Thank you.
So he's got all, like, he comes up with names for people that text all the time, mm-hmm. and cell phones are like meme machines or something. He just hates it all.
Right.
Doesn't have a website. He's not on the Twitter, none of that. And then one day, a website pops up about his dental practice.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Facebook page for him. And somebody's tweeting, like, from his persona.
Through his name, yeah.
And he sets out to be like, who's doing this?
Uh-huh.
And I won't say any more about that or what happens. But he meets all of these folks. And, of course, it comes down to the journey to discover who's posing as him. He finds out more about himself.
Awesome. What's it called again?
To Rise Again at a Decent Hour. And Joshua Ferris, he's a really interesting writer, and he's kind of, I would say, sort of highly stylized. And the book, I think you got to stick with it. There's a part, like, it starts strong, and then two-thirds of the way through, you're like, oh, this is all just falling apart. And then it ends really well. But I want to mention his first book, which is one of my favorite books, is called Then We Came to the End.
Mm-hmm.
So this one isn't about technology per se, but I'm going to go ahead and throw it in there. It is his debut, and it's really, really funny. And it is about a ad agency in Chicago at the end of the 90s when everything is starting to fall apart and the agency is falling on hard times and there's massive layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks at the office politics and personalities that happen there. What's cool about it is that it's told from the first person plural. Like everything is we.
We, yeah.
Which is a really interesting thing, but it's got all of the classic stereotypes. Like, so there's the office know-it-all, there's the gossip, there's the whiner, and there is, of course, the stapler thief,
right?
Of course,
yes. Yeah.
And it takes these archetypal kind of caricatures and plays it out. And it's really, really funny. It's a really creative debut.
Joshua Ferris. Let's check that out. That's both sounds really interesting. All right. So I'm going to go really generic for my fiction recommendation and say Jurassic Park. Because if you haven't read it, you have to. If you haven't, I mean, even if you've seen the movie, the book is the book better? I don't even know. They're really good.
Right. They are. The movie is well done, but if you've never read the book is delightful. It's a really good book.
Yeah, yeah. And goes into directions that you don't even necessarily think of. If you've seen the movie, then the book just expands on some of those. The points that sort of get thrown away in the movie, like really quick, like someone makes an offhand comment, is actually an 8-chapter arc in the book
right.
that they're trying to summarize down. So a really, really great novel about the unintended consequences of technology.
Because we can do something, should we do something?
Should we do something, yeah. Did you ever see the what's it called? Real trailers for, it's on YouTube. Oh, now I'm blanking on what it is. Real, honest trailers, I think is what it is. Have you seen those?
No.
Honest trailers, like they take a classic movie and they put together a trailer that's like honest about the movie's flaws. And one of the things that they point out about Jurassic Park is it's the first movie where audiences got to see a GIF for the first time. It's the picture of Newman, like, shaking his finger.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I hadn't seen that before. And now it's, like, all over the place.
Oh,
the
that's cool.
The technology from the movie is so outdated now. But
So that's an interesting point because what I was gonna get nerdy on book cover art for a second.
Yeah.
So if you think about the cover of Jurassic Park was that white cover with the silhouette of the T-Rex skeleton.
Yep.
That was a groundbreaking book cover. Like that book cover, there's a book cover artist named Chip Kidd, who's also an author, but he sort of broke the mold for book jacket design and brought modern sensibility. So we look at that now and you wouldn't think it's anything special.
Right.
But if you look at the history of book jacket covers, that cover is seen as like a revolutionary design for a book cover.
Oh, that's cool.
Right?
Because it was like spare and sparse and
minimalistic.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really, it's so simple that it doesn't, you wouldn't see it and think, oh, this is like a sort of sci-fi adventure thriller. So it really thought about it and approached the design of it in a really different
way. That's really cool. Because it is really simplistic, but it's also, you got that shadow of the T-Rex. It's ominous. It's science-y. And you
librarians. We know random stuff.
Yeah, you
random
do.
Facts.
That's really cool. I don't even know if I have that book anymore. But
I got one more for
you. All right.
Sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about books that, like science fiction books that predicted the internet, right?
Okay, yeah.
So there's Neuromancer, everybody points to, and a couple other ones. 1984.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Ender's Game.
Okay.
Which is one of my all-time favorite books.
I've never read Ender's
Game.
Oh,
you know. This interview's over. I'm outraged.
She's gone. Oh,
that's right. I might have to bring you a copy.
Yeah.
It's such a good book. Did you see the movie?
I haven't, no. I wanted to read the book first. And
you should totally read the book first. The movie actually did a really good job. I was one of those geeks who was like on the Make Ender's Game a Movie protest, like mounting the campaign for like 10 years. I mean, people waited for that movie forever. But Ender's Game in it, or the premise of it, it's far into the future. The Earth has lost two wars against this alien force, and they're training for the third war because they know it's coming, and they're training kids for the battle. And Ender is chosen, I think he's 10 in the book, and he goes off to battle school. But in it, they predict everything. I mean, Orson Scott Card's got the internet pegged, where like the kids can get on and sort of post political blogs and all of that. And then when they're sitting in the battle school, they basically have iPads at their desks.
Nice.
So it's really fun to read because it's not that far back, but it predicted all of the pros and cons of technology.
Interesting.
It's a really good book.
Okay. I know I have to read Ender's Game. I have to sit down.
And the other great thing about that book, so then there were there were two sequels, and there was a quartet initially.
Okay.
And then what's brilliant about Orson Scott Card is he went back and he rewrote Ender's Game from the perspective of a second character, of like one of the secondary characters.
Okay.
And so you experience the familiar story from a totally different point of view,
cool.
which is awesome.
Awesome. All right. I'm going to have to check that out. All right. My third recommendation is not mine. I was talking with Kristen Smith as she was walking out the door. I was like, do you have any recommendations for books about technology? And she said, so this is her recommendation, so I take no credit for it, that there was an author named Larry Downes who spoke to them about high-speed internet and what it means. And he has a book called Big Bang Disruption, which is a fairly popular book. I'd heard the title. I haven't read it. But it is about – it's also sort of the unintended consequences of technology, but it's about those moments. And we've seen them fairly recently in economics where you've got an industry, you've got an industry, you've got an industry, and then all of a sudden a new thing comes along, a new approach that just completely overnight wipes out the industry. So, for instance, you've got there's an extent to which, like, you've got big box bookstores that are being supplanted by Amazon, but he's thinking about like a whole industry for like handheld compasses and map GPSs,
yeah, right,
that are in your cars. But now that Google Maps comes along and you've got this great free resource
right.
that can tell you where you are in any given moment, all of a sudden this entire industry just overnight gets wiped out and everyone moves over to this thing. So what do you do as an industry, as a business, if you become victimized by a big bang disruption where you're going along and then all of a sudden, boom, you're gone.
Which makes me think of like Uber and taxicabs.
Right? Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yep,
that
yep.
happens all the time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Or like the entire travel industry when the internet comes along and all of a sudden you can get online and start researching plane fares and hotels for yourself. Like, you've got to completely reinvent yourself.
Now, to bring it back around to me and what I do.
Yes.
10, 15 years ago, maybe more, people were, saying, oh, the internet, it's going to kill libraries. We're not going to need libraries because we have the internet. And then e-books and the Kindle, we're not going to need libraries.
Yep.
And of course, our circulation for print and digital is way up and 1,500 people are coming through our doors every day. So
awesome.
We're not disrupted. Well,
yes.
we were disrupted,
yeah.
but we learned
but
to
learn
adapt
to,
to it.
Yep, exactly.
And, yeah.
I think that's what this is about. So, Big
See
Bang
how
Disruption
I did that?
By Larry Downes. That was awesome. Cool. All right. So those are my recommendations. Do you have any more?
That's it.
All right. So those are the books to check out if you want to learn more about Google Fiber. Not one of those books talks about Google Fiber. That's fine. Susan Brown, Chapel Hill Public Library. Ask a Lawyer Day is on Saturday, so head there from 10 to 1 and take part in that. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.